We are early in our journey through the book of Exodus. Most of us here who has been with us from the beginning of the year, you know, you've been following, hopefully you've been following through this study in the book of Exodus. Last week we almost finished chapter 2. So this week we're going to jump off where we left off last week at the end of, or near the end of chapter 2. But before we do that, let's review again, okay? So by way of review, last week we finished the mini-series on God's growth strategies. Hopefully you guys were here for that whole thing. But that whole series was based on verses 15 to 22 of chapter 2, which I said contained some ways or some strategies that God uses to grow his people. In the context of the story, God used it to grow Moses. Okay, Moses, remember the story? Moses killed an Egyptian in defense of an Israelite brother, and then he went running through the wilderness, ended up in Midian, and then in Midian, he started to grow. God started the process of growing him, preparing him to be the leader that he was going to call him to be later on. So that whole 7-8 verses was about how God grew him. And if you can remember, God used several ways or strategies to grow Moses. He used testing. He used serving or ministry. And God used mainly relationships and family in order to grow Moses into the leader that God has called him to be. So hopefully you are here for that. At the end of chapter 2, the story unfolds. And not just at the end of chapter 2, throughout the rest of this story, all the way through the wilderness and all the way to the end, Moses would need every one of these ways that God grew him. He would need all the patience that he could get. He would need leadership skills. He would learn by raising a family and being a shepherd. By now, Moses is a shepherd, right? He's not a prince anymore. And he would use all those ways that God grew him in order to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. But before we get there, there's this little three verses in the end of chapter 2 that a lot of us are probably like, what's that doing there? Why can't we just go straight to the burning bush? But I think those three verses are important, so we're going to take them up this morning. Verses 23 to 25. So if we read those verses again, it shifts. The focus shifts. It's all about Moses so far, chapter 2, right? From his birth to him becoming a prince to him killing an Egyptian to him running into the wilderness, and right? Now it shifts. At the end of chapter 2, it shifts to God. The focus is now on God himself, and the focus has shifted from Midian back to Egypt, right? What's this last two verses talking about? It says, during those many days, the king of Egypt died. So if you were watching this on a big screen, on a movie, you know, the last scene was Moses, what? Moses being married to Zipporah, they're having kids, blah, 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 right? Having a good time. Moses' life is straightening out. Then all of a sudden, it shifts, goes back to Egypt, where the king of Egypt is now dead. And the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. So now, usually when we study our scriptures, what we do first is interpret what that means. And just reading it, it seems straightforward. So, king of Egypt's dead, but the people of Israel are still groaning because they're still in slavery. So, how do we understand that is the question, and how do we extract applications on how we ought to read that and live out whatever it's trying to say. So, let's interpret it first. Let's find out what the author's goal is in putting those three verses in the end of chapter 2. And let's extract some lessons from these verses later on. Okay? So, first interpret. Okay? Interpretation, you know, is observation and asking questions. Right? So, when you read that, what's the observation that first come to mind and what questions come to mind? Well, most obvious thing is what? During those many days. That's the first thing, right? They label it days, but it was really years. How many years did Moses spend in the wilderness? 40 years. That's those days that's been talking about there. So during that time that Moses spent in the wilderness, the king of Egypt died. So if you're going to interpret it that way, we can read that verse as during the 40 years that Moses spent in the Midian, the king of Egypt died. Okay. So within that 40 years, whoever was the king of Egypt back then is now. Okay. Next observation. Why mention that the king of Egypt died? Who cares? Right? Why mention? By the way, king of Egypt is dead. So what does that do for us, the readers? Right? Why mention that the king of Egypt died? Well, I think that this was the signal for Moses' return. The death of the king of Egypt signals the return of Moses. What makes me think that? Because remember the last time that Moses was in Egypt, he killed an Egyptian. And who was going to chase him so that they could kill him? It was the king of Egypt. When he found out that Moses killed the Egyptian, he wanted to kill him. That's why Moses ran away, right? So if Moses had returned with the same king on the throne, what do you think would have happened? He would have been killed on the spot, right? But that's just my interpretation. Okay? So don't take that as, you know, that's the interpretation for that verse, because there's another interpretation which I think fits as well. But does it make sense? Like, if you think about it, if Moses returned while that king was still angry at him and chasing him, he would have died, right? So that's how I make sense of verse 23. But again, I think a more biblical interpretation would be that it was all in God's timing for the king of Egypt to die within the 40 years that God used to grow Moses in Midian, so that when God calls on Moses to finally return to Egypt, Moses would be ready. That goes with the context. That interpretation actually goes with the context. I'm not just assuming that the reason why Moses is coming back is because, oh, it's safe to come back now. Right? You understand? So what's the interpretation? How should we read? How should we understand this verse? God, in his timing, okay, within the 40 years that he was training Moses, discipling Moses to be the leader, to rescue the Israelites, within that time, the king of Egypt also died, making it safe for Moses to return at the same time so that Moses would be ready to return and lead the Israelites out of Egypt. See the difference between my assumption and a more biblically context, in the within context interpretation, right? There's a difference, right? So, let me remind you once again, okay? When you think about the interpretation that I just shared with you, that this is all in God's timing, a few sermons back, I said that there are no coincidences when it comes to God. So the dying of the king of Egypt, it was not coincidence. That was part of the plan, right? The king of Egypt didn't coincidentally just die just before Moses was to go back to Egypt in order to rescue the Israelites. In fact, I believe that even if the king had lived, Moses would have still gone back to Egypt after 40 years in Midian. So let's just say that the first part of verse 23 is to show us, again, God's timing is always perfect for the purpose of accomplishing his plan for the people of Israel and for Moses, who's going to be their rescuer. Okay, let's just leave it like that. That verse is talking about the timing of God. Right? Now, look what comes next. 23b. It says, their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. So, if the death of the king of Egypt is the signal for Moses' return, then this next verse validates the interpretation that it was based on God's timing. Why? Because the Israelites are now still crying out for rescue from slavery. That validates our interpretation of the first part of the verse, right? The time that Moses is coming back is the time that the cry of Israel is getting louder and louder and louder. Now, note that this groaning or this crying for help are all in present tense, meaning, what does that mean, present tense? It's been ongoing, right? If you read it, it's in present tense. It's ongoing. They weren't crying yesterday and stopped crying today. They were crying yesterday, and they're still crying right now. That's what that means, right? It's an ongoing cry for help. Now, question is, how long do you think the Israelites have been crying for a rescue? Going on 80 years, right? Right? If this is present tense, they've been crying since Moses was pretty much born. And Moses is about 80 at this point, right? So it's been going on 80 years, and they've been crying for the past 40 years that Moses was in the desert. Now, if that's the case, and we all agree that that's the case, yes? Or do you think they were just crying that day when the king of Egypt died? No. They've been crying for almost 80 years, right? Now, if that's the case, then we've got to ask ourselves the question, why hasn't God responded? Like, what's wrong? It's been 80 years. Has God grown deaf? Has, you know, God just can't hear their cries anymore? Why didn't God rescue the Israelites at the moment they started crying? Why wait this long? Because if you look at it from the perspective of the Israelites, who were the ones experiencing the pain of slavery, it would have seemed that God either forgot about them or is ignoring their cries or just can't hear them anymore, right? If you were one of the Israelites, it's been 80 years, you've been crying for help, nothing. How would you feel, right? But again, in everything, God had a purpose and God had a plan. By the way, that crying, okay, is because, and their crying grew louder and louder, because every time a king died, they were hoping for a better king, a more, you know, kinder king to come and end their slavery. But every time a king is replaced, it's the same thing. They were still kept in slavery. So throughout the whole time, I don't know how many kings has passed, Their situation never changed. That's why their crying grew louder and louder and louder. Right? But again, the reason why God didn't rescue them right away, is because he had a purpose. He had a plan. And I believe that the 40 years that Moses spent in Midian was not just so God could grow and prepare Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt, but also to prepare the Israelites themselves to leave Egypt and follow Moses. And I think I mentioned this before in one of the sermons, that if we were to fast forward to the wilderness and how the Israelites would continually complain to Moses and the other leaders and tell them pretty much every time that they had a complaint, they tell the leaders, we had it better in Egypt. You shouldn't have taken us out of Egypt. Why did you bring us out here to die? They were always complaining that way. They were always looking back and thinking slavery was better than this, right? If you fast forward in their time in the wilderness. Now, what do you think would happen if the Israelites never experienced the suffering that they experienced under the Pharaohs? If everything was good in Egypt, they were slaves, but if everything was good, like if they weren't, they were slaves, but they weren't really treated bad, what do you think would happen to the Israelites? They would want to stay, right? They wouldn't want to leave. But because their hopes were dashed year after year, that the new king of Egypt would be kinder and gentler, they gladly went with Moses and left Egypt for good when he finally came back. Right? Because they're like, this is not happening. We've been through however many kings, and it's still the same situation for us. And then there now comes this rescuer. I'll take you out of Egypt so you'll stop the, you know, you don't have to be slaves anymore. Okay, yeah, we'll go. So the 40 years that God used to grow Moses, he also used to prepare the Israelites to leave Egypt. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that 40 years of crying and groaning, that frustration that kept building up every time a new king would arise and their situation wouldn't change, that hopelessness also drove the Israelites to groan or to pray before God. Okay. I'm going to read you a comment by Calvin. It says this: we know that the hope of a happier issue is soothing to our woes, and the hope that someone more kind would succeed the dead tyrant, in some measure soften the misery of the afflicted people. But when the change of kings in no wise lightened their oppression, what happened to them? Their sorrow was increased and forced them to cry out more loudly than before. That's like when you first elected a president or a prime minister. Right? Yes, this is it. Our country will now change. This is the guy. Elect. Cling. Election's coming, right? And then when he steps in, it's the same old. None of whatever he said, whatever he promised, he didn't do any of it. Same thing over again. What do you think happens to the people? They get frustrated. They get hopeless. That's what's happening to the Israelites. The change of kings didn't change their situation, so their groans grew more loud. And so we can see from that God had a purpose for the 40 years, both for Moses and for the people that he was being called to rescue. So how did God respond to the groans? Right? So because these groans are like prayers, right? They're like lamentations to God. God, we're suffering. God, we're suffering. It's been 80 years. Nothing's going on. Slavery is just getting worse and worse and worse. Help us. How did God respond to these groans? Check out verses 24 and 25. And God, what? Heard their groaning. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. 25. God saw people of Israel, and God knew. Again, when you read this part of the verse, We can't question whether or not God was not listening in the first place, or God was just ignoring the groans of his people. I hope I have shown you that God had a purpose for this long wait before answering the prayers and the groans of the Israelites. But as you can see in verses 24 and 25, the good news is that God was listening. And God heard their prayers and their groans. And what else did it do? God remembered. So it's not like he forgot. He remembered his covenant with the ancestors of the Israelites. And then what did he do? He looked upon them. He saw his people, and God knew what needed to be done. Now, if you look at all the words that describe God's response, first God heard, then God remembered, then God saw, then God knew. If you look at all those words, those words are all pretty much action words when it comes to God. So the hearing is an action because it led to remembering. When he remembered, it led to seeing. When he saw, it led to, I know what to do. And he already knew, but at this point, he was going to act on it. Right? He was going to act on it. If you know, the word new in scriptures is an action word. Right? If you look at Old Testament in Genesis, Adam knew Eve. When the scripture says that, it doesn't mean that, oh yeah, Eve, I know you. No. It's an action word. It means something. They did something. Right? Same thing here. When God knew, the New Testament calls that foreknowing, and even foreknowing is an action word. What did God do? He chased after those whom he knew. Right? Right? He chased after them, just like what he did with us. Right? He knew us before we were even born. And when God knows you, he chases after you. He rescues you. You're one of his sheep. That's why he rescues you. He knows you. That's action words. All those words are, or were, or are action words. So we can say that when God heard the groaning, and he's been hearing all this time, after 40 years in the wilderness and preparing Moses and the Israelites, this time he acted. He acted through Moses. But it was God's action that ultimately freed the Israelites from their bondage of slavery in Egypt. Right? So when we read this part of the verse, that's what happened. Right? After 40 years, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel kept groaning. And what did God do? God acted after 40 years. And after this, you go to chapter 3, and it's what? The burning bush. The calling of Moses to actually save the or rescue the Israelites from the bondage of slavery in Egypt. Everybody agree with that interpretation? No? You study it again. I encourage you to do that. Read it again and study it. And come up with the same interpretation. But if not, let's talk about it. But that's what I see there, okay? That God, in his perfect timing, acted on the groans of the Israelites. Okay? Now that we've got interpretation set, what can we learn from this part of the story? What can we take from it? What can we extract from it, right? As far as learning, okay? First, and I've said this already, God's timing is always perfect. But let me add something to that. God's timing is always perfect for his purposes, not ours. Because a lot of people, they want God's timing to be according to their schedule. No, it doesn't work that way. God's timing is always perfect according to His or for His purposes, not ours. Like I said earlier, if the Israelites have been groaning and crying and praying for more than 40 years, why did it take God so long to answer? Because God's timing is perfect. He was not going to rescue them one day too early because they wouldn't want to leave. So He let them stay there for 40 years. At the same time, He was grooming Moses to be the rescuer. Right? God's timing is perfect for His purposes. Right? Why is it like that? Because we don't know enough. We don't see enough of the big picture for us to determine when things should happen. Right? But sometimes we think that we do. You complain to God, God, why aren't you here yet? Why haven't you answered my prayers yet? What's taking you so long? You know I need, right? You know I need my tuition, or I need my mortgage, or I need a job, or I need a husband. I need, what's wrong with you, God? Because He's not working on our schedule. We don't know enough. We don't see enough of the big picture to determine when things should happen. It's like this. If you're experiencing grief right now, or you have a very big financial problem, or you have a very big relational problem, and it seems as though none of your prayers are getting answered, guess what? How do you think the Israelites felt? 40 years! Of slavery. It seems that God wasn't listening, right? But was He? The whole time He was. He was just waiting for His perfect time, the perfect timing to accomplish His purpose. Because it doesn't work in our schedules. He works in His own, right? So if you're experiencing any of these problems, you feel like none of your prayers are getting answered, guess what? They are. You just have to believe that, right? And again, the problem is that we can't see the big picture. We can't see what God is working in the background, so to speak. All we see and feel is the pain, fear, and even anger of having these problems. We don't realize that there God is working on the big picture, the whole situation, not just your own little world, but whatever else you affect. You understand? And that's the problem with us. We can't see that. We don't realize that. We think that whatever's happening to us should be God's main focus. It doesn't work that way. Right? We don't realize that. The other thing we don't realize that when we do that, when we feel like we're the center of the universe and God should be focusing on our problems alone, what we're really doing is doubting the goodness of God to use pain, to use fear, and sometimes even our anger to make us and our faith even more stronger. Do you agree with that? Can God use our pain and our sorrows and our problems and our fears to make us stronger? Yeah. Believe that, right? And I think that's one of the aspects of unanswered prayers that we often fail to see. When we look at unanswered prayers, all we see is, well, God's not listening. Or God's not paying attention. He's too busy for me. I'm just little old so-and-so. My problems don't matter to Him. It does. You're just sitting there, oh, you're focused too much on yourself to realize that, man, maybe God is working somehow. Maybe He has to finish this and this and this and this first so that He can solve this. Right? That's one aspect of unanswered prayers that we often fail to see. That sometimes God uses unanswered prayers to strengthen our faith even more when he does answer. Right? Sometimes he doesn't answer on purpose. So that when he does, you're like, oh. And usually when he does answer, it's the perfect time. You ever experienced that? Nobody? Just me? Tough room. Or even think about the fact that there is a part that God is currently working on that will play a role in solving your problem. That's why he hasn't gotten to you yet. He wants to work on this other part first so that when that part is done, he gets to you and you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe this happened. Because God was working on that before he worked on you. You get what I'm saying? Sometimes that's why God doesn't answer. He's working on something else. Like if you're having relational issues or relationship issues, you know, don't think that it's always the other person's issues that God should be working on. And when nothing is happening with that other person, you get even more upset. Why isn't God working on that guy? Meanwhile, what God is doing is working on you. Preparing you so that when the other person is ready, you both will be. And usually when that happens, it's God's perfect time. Because if one of you is not ready, then all you're going to do is this. And nothing's going to be solved. Amen? You guys believe that? Because it happened to me. It happened to me early in our marriage, me and my wife. I think it was 5 years into our marriage, more than 5 years. It was 12 years into our marriage. We were always fighting. We were always having problems. And it was because of unconfessed sin. One of us had unconfessed sin. And it was me. There was something I was hiding from my wife that I should have told her a long, long time ago. But I had no courage to do so because I know the consequences. If I do this, oh no, if I tell her this, that's it. It's no way, she'll stay with me, she'll leave me. But at the same time, you're also thinking about, oh man, if I do that, that means I'm going to lose my kids. You know, I'm going to lose all the stuff that I have with the marriage. So I kept praying to God, God, give me the courage and strength and words to be able to express this to my wife without her, you know, taking an axe or something and killing me with it. Right? Years it took before I actually had the courage to speak up. And I was wondering, you know, looking in hindsight, why did it take that long? Because, and I didn't think about this at the time that I was praying for this, because my wife wasn't ready yet either. She wasn't ready to receive that kind of news and be able to forgive. So if I forced it on her, it would have turned out bad, really bad. But since God, in his perfect timing, made me wait and wait and wait and carry that burden for years and years and years, when the time came that I have to talk to my wife, the courage was there, the peace was there, and I told her. And to my surprise, she got angry, but she didn't get that angry. And after that, our relationship took a change because of that. By the way, this is off topic. If there's any unconfessed sin in your relationships, that's what's dragging you down. If there is any, okay? I'm not saying that there is. If there is any, confess it. We're not just supposed to confess to God. We're supposed to confess to each other, right? So don't say, I already confessed to God. He already forgave me. Meanwhile, your husband or your wife doesn't know about it, then no, confess it. Because sometimes that's what's dragging your relationship down. So that's a different topic. But anyway, my point is, God sometimes makes you wait in agony sometimes, or in the case of the Israelites in slavery, because he's busy preparing the second part of the equation that will help solve your issue. Right? It's not just you. There's other pieces to it that God's preparing. So if God says, wait, or there's no answer, just keep praying, just keep waiting. Waiting. If you have to groan, lament. Wait. But wait in hope of an answer from God. And that answer will come for perfect timing, at the perfect time. See, if it doesn't, it's not going to work. Okay? So that's the first thing we can learn from this. God's timing is perfect for his purposes, not ours. Second, God is always at work in preparing you for something, whether your life is going well or not. Oh, that's okay. I like the sad music. Very dramatic. Okay? Second thing we can learn from our text is that God is always at work preparing us for something, whether our lives are going well or not. Let's think about it from the perspective of Moses, okay? So at this point in his life, Moses must have been enjoying life, right? The reason I say that is because, first of all, he got away with murder. He's still alive, right? He got away with murder, and not only that, he's living in the desert with a wife and children, and having probably the best job that he's ever had, shepherding his in-laws' flock. That's all he's doing every single day. Shepherd the flock, take care of your kids, go back to your wife, routine. He's living the life, right? Because he should have been dead. He should have been in prison for what he did to the Egyptian. So he's all relaxed. It's all, this is it. I don't have to do anything else. Little did he know that the life that he is living is God's way of training and preparing him for something that he doesn't want to do. Right? Have you ever experienced that? I certainly think you're looking at Moses right now. Right? I was chilling, working at the bank, making good money. At this time, my marriage was fine. It was good. Kids were okay. No problems. And I get a call from Pastor Luis. By the way, I saw him yesterday. He's still the same. I get a call from Pastor Luis. Take care of the church. I'm retiring. What? I'm okay. I don't need any more stress. Youth was going good. Now, looking back at it, everything that I've gone through was in preparation for this. God is always preparing you for something, whether your life is going well or not. Everything that happened to me, good or bad, was preparation for who I am and what I do now. That's why I always say I have no regrets. If I were to live my life all over again, I would probably do the same thing over again, both the good and the bad, because I know it's going to lead me to today. And I say that because if you look at, again, the life of Moses, think about it. If Moses didn't kill the Egyptian, and he didn't have to run away, what do you think would have happened, or what do you think would have changed in the story? Would he have been the leader that God has called him or will call him to be? I don't think so. He probably would have stayed in Egypt, enjoyed the riches of Egypt, right? He wouldn't have had those lessons that he learned in the desert, right? if that didn't happen. Yes, it's a bad thing, but if that didn't happen, the story will change. Now, what about you? Let me ask you this. Think about all the bad things that you did. And then think about how God used those things in order to grow you into the person that you are today. Think about it. I'm sure some of you did some bad things, right? Wrong things in the sight of God. You believe that God used that to make you the person that you are today? God can do that, right? What does Romans 8:28 says? Well, God is able to what? Work all things for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. Right? And that's the qualification for that. Okay, I'm not saying this and it applies to everybody. Okay? I know some of you did some bad things and are still doing some bad things right now. So there's a qualification in Romans 8:28, right? So when you read Romans 8:28, God can only do or work all things for the good of those people who love Him. And those people are called according to His purpose. So if nothing has changed in the way that you live your life, especially when it comes to your relationship with God, then forget about my previous statement. That's not for you. That's just for Christians. Okay? That's not to say that you can keep doing bad and God will work things for good. It doesn't matter if you love Him or not. No, that's not what I'm saying. That's just for Christians. That's just for people who love God. Right? What you need right now, if that's you, what you need right now is God through Jesus Christ. It's the only way that all the bad that you did and are doing right now can be turned into good. Otherwise, I don't care how much you try to change, you won't be able to save yourself. Salvation only comes by grace from God the Father to give you the faith to believe in His Son. And without that faith, you will not be convinced that what Jesus did on the cross is sufficient in order to pay for the penalties of your sins. In fact, without that faith, you won't think that you need salvation at all. That's why you keep doing these bad things. You understand what I'm saying? This is not for everybody. God is only able to work good things or all things for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. That's why you can say, the way I'm saying now, I have no regrets. Because it led me here. If your life is going a different direction, well, ask yourself, am I one of those people? Or are the bad things that I'm doing, bad decisions that I make, contributing to the direction of my life? It probably is, most likely, right? And what sucks about that is there's nobody to work it for good. You can't work it for good. Nobody else can work it for good. Only God can work it for good. That's why even serial killers can be saved. Right? So if that's hitting you in a place right now that's making you ask questions about your faith, you know, the cross of Christ is the only way to be made right with God, please reach out. Right? We're here for you. Elders, deacons, we'll be glad to sit with you and talk to you about these things. Now, all that is to say that God is even using this sermon to prepare us for something. Whether that something is your salvation or His call and purpose for your life. Right? God is always working on you, if you're a Christian, to prepare you for it could be being a pastor. It could be being a deacon or an elder. It could be being a more active member of the church. It could be for marriage. It could be for adoption. It could be whatever it is. God is always preparing us for something. We're not here just walking around with no purpose at all. Let me say that. There's a purpose for you. That's why you're still alive. And that's why you're hearing this right now. God has a purpose for this and a purpose for you. Whatever that is, I don't know. But one day you'll know. And just like Moses, you'll be called to that burning bush. Moses, take off your sandals, come here. What? Go back to Egypt. Rescue the Israelites. What? Tita Tez, you're going to get married in a few days. Whatever it is. Because it will come, I'm telling you. Because I don't believe that God will save somebody, you sit here and do nothing. No, there's a purpose for you. And he's always preparing you for that purpose. Whatever it is. Amen? I hope so. So, what's the final lesson? God is always at work. He's always acting, even when we don't see it. That's the lesson of the verse. 40 years the Israelites had to wait, groan, prayed, thinking of the whole time, where is God? Meanwhile, God is doing the work in the background. Working. And then one day, time is right. Boom, he drops Moses on them. And the rest, shall we say, is history. But we will take it up still. Okay? But that's what happened there. Israel's groaning for 40 years led to their, well, but was just part of the process that God intended for them, for his purposes, and for his perfect timing for things to move forward. Okay? If you're in that spot, again, trust that God is working, even if you can't see it. Even if you can't feel it. He's always working. Right? He's like my mom, right? My mom can't sit around and do nothing. She always has to be, you know, people like that? Always has to be moving, working, doing something. Right, Nanay Annie? And then complains afterwards, oh, my back is... But there's people like that, right? You can't stop, but you can't stop them. They keep moving around. Can you stop and rest? That's God. God never stops. He never sleeps. He never gets tired. He never gets weary. He's always working. What is he doing? He's always working in you. For his purpose. And then at the right time, he'll call you. You excited for that? I hope so. Let's bow down our heads. Let's pray.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord lift his countenance upon you. Shine upon you
and be gracious
unto you
and be gracious.
The Lord be gracious.